Caroline, Willie, D. Mays, 102.5, 106.3, The Game and The Game Nashville app. We are streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every single day. And we're less than 2 weeks away from the NFL draft going down next Thursday. I guess it's a little over a week until the NFL draft going down next Thursday in Detroit. And that's exactly what we're talking
about. Can we move that, by the way, to this Thursday since we got to wait for the Predators?
No, Willie, we need all the tea time. We need all the time.
I just think it would work out well for my schedule.
Oh, that
it's
is
about
true.
Me.
That is true.
To have the draft this weekend and then start the playoffs on Monday or Tuesday, whatever it's going to be. Works out perfect.
That would work out perfectly.
Instead, I'm going to be like in Vancouver or Dallas, wherever we are, and I'm going to be trying to do a game and watch the draft board. That's happened to me several times.
The draft is a hot commodity in
Vancouver. I believe I was in Vancouver when Jake Locker was picked. In the first round.
You may be in Vancouver again.
That could be.
Yes.
Yeah. Wow. And I was where was I last year? It was the regular season, I think, was still going on. When the 2 years ago, when the, I don't know, maybe it was a playoff game. But when the trade, the A.J. Mm-hmm. Brown trade
that
happened.
That was in Colorado.
It was Colorado. Mm-hmm. I was in Colorado.
So maybe stay out of Colorado.
Yeah.
No, we just need to move the draft up, too.
I just want to be able to sit back
and watch the draft without a game going on. Come on.
Well, the draft, the first night is a Thursday, so hopefully they don't start the playoffs on the third. Well, they don't have a game on that Thursday.
I'm thinking game two could be in there. Maybe I'll just have to talk to the Canucks.
Yeah.
No games Thursday. Move game two.
Exactly. Listen, we,
I'm sure they would be happy to
we here in the States need to watch the draft, okay?
We need to separate. We need both need to have the spotlight.
Exactly.
Because everyone in Vancouver understands draft above the Stanley Cup playoffs.
They're like, wait, are you talking about the CFL?
Everyone in Canada understands that.
The trend Willie has here, Jake Locker, A.J. Brown trend, I don't like this.
You may need to move the draft
to this week.
Or can we move the playoffs to this week? Because I can't wait another week. For hockey.
That would be fine.
Very well could be eight whole days that we are hockeyless.
All games should have ended yesterday.
I agree.
All games in the NHL should
have
ended.
Take it up with Gary.
Yeah, I'm going to call Gary.
Call Gary.
Absolutely.
Register a complaint.
Nick, get Gary on the line.
Let me go through the
Come right
next.
I'm going to go through the
Yeah. TBD. So, yeah, Gary Bettman will join us. I'm just kidding.
I just said Gary. I didn't say who. I
know
Gary.
About four or five Garys. I can get you a Gary.
So get Gary on the line.
Get you a Gary. It may not be your Gary, but it'll be a Gary. But we are just over a week away from the NFL draft. And the million-dollar question, the billion-dollar question, the multi-billion-dollar question is, what's a draft strategy? Because I think you can plan all day long. You can watch all the film that you want to watch. You can do all the interviews that you want to do. You can have a plan A, B, C, D, all the way through Z, and you still might not hit in the first round of the NFL draft. It is as close to an art or a strategy or just pure chaos as you can possibly get to. But there's a recent article in The Athletic put out by Alec Lewis. He did a great job addressing that question of what is the correct draft strategy. And it broke down three major takeaways from a data analytics guru who broke down all of this data from the 1988 to 2004 NFL drafts. But Willie, I'll let you kind of take it from here because you were the one that brought this to our attention.
Well, it focused on a couple of different things. There's a lot of ways we could take this, but there was a study done because the title of the article says, NFL teams know the best way to draft, so why aren't they doing it? And so it gets into the data shows over a long period of time, these studies that you referenced, what works over the long term. It doesn't mean that you can't find a year here or a year there where a different strategy works. That definitely is part of it. But over the long term, there are some things that have been proven to be true, yet teams still don't do it that way. Mm-hmm. It's and it gets into a lot of different layers, and some of them we've already touched on earlier in the show. But there were three principles that this study was done by a couple of professors of something or other,
there was a guy that was at
University of Chicago, Harvard grad
in analytics.
Yeah, and one of them wanted to get into personnel in football. So he looked at this study and he took it around and he ended up getting hired. But There was a study done on all of the draft picks from 1988 to 2004, and there were three things that came up. And this was mind-blowing to me. So you guys give me your take on this. Mm-hmm. The first overall pick of the draft is actually the least valuable in the first round, according to the surplus value a team can create with each pick. In other words, last year, the Bears had the first pick and mm-hmm. traded out of that and got a boatload of picks. The Titans, under John Robinson, mm-hmm. had a lot of success trading the first pick. You know, it was a mixed bag. They didn't get a home run, but they got some good stuff out of trading out of the first overall pick. So it does go against conventional thinking. Oh, my gosh, they have the first pick. They won the lottery. And like, if you're getting Shaquille O'Neal with the first pick, that's one thing. But there are a lot of years where getting the first pick isn't necessarily the best. So this is, again, a study of 1988 to 2004. That's a lot, right? So it depends on who the number one guy is in a given year. But over time, the number one pick is the least valuable pick in the first round. Do you guys buy that? Or
tell
do you
the
think-
Cincinnati Bengals that the first yeah. overall pick is not the most valuable pick in okay. the draft. Or the Jacksonville Jags. Or maybe the Cleveland Browns might agree with you that that's not necessarily the most valuable. Yeah. I think it can be incredibly anecdotal. You could look at it. I think it depends on the year. I think it depends on the draft class. It depends on who's available. This year, Chicago's looking at it like we won the lottery because Caleb Williams is viewed as that guy, the next Patrick Mahomes. Does he become that? I don't know. Time will tell. Maybe in 5 years, we're looking back and saying, yes, absolutely. Maybe in 5 years, we look back and say, what were we giving all that hype about Caleb Williams to? But I can look at so many years in the past and say, well, the first overall pick, I mean, that's your franchise quarterback. That's your quarterback for the next 15 years. That's the quarterback that got you to the Super Bowl or player in general. But, I mean, it's hard for me to say, and especially from 1988 to 2004. If this was a study done from 2004 to 2020.
Would it be different?
It mm-hmm. might be a little
that's
bit
a,
different.
That's a fair question, and one that I thought of. Like, yeah. I'd like to see if these principles have carried over for the last 20 years and not just that, what is it, 26-year period or 16-year period. I think
because football has changed, and I think the way they scout it changes now because yeah. a lot of the college game is in the pro game now.
And like in 88, you're probably drafting a running back with
exactly,
the first overall
yeah.
pick. Like
or a left tackle with the first overall pick. Yeah. Probably not. If you got that first overall pick, you're drafting a quarterback.
So we would say debatable on yeah. that on that principle there. But remember, these are the findings based on what happened. It's not a theory. It's from 88 to 2004. Mm-hmm. The number one pick, you were better off wheeling it for other picks mm-hmm. is how the success rate did. I'm sure we could find a first round. But, you know, Jeff George was in there 1 year, right, as the first pick in one of those drafts. There was another one. Wasn't Andre Bruce was the first pick mm-hmm. in the draft 1 year? Like, that didn't go real well. Here's principle number two. See if you agree with this. Across all rounds, the probability that a player starts more games than the next player chosen at his position is just 53%. And that leads to principle number three. Teams generated a 174% return on trades by foregoing a pick for this year for additional picks next year. So it lends itself to saying trading down, getting more picks, is the best way to have success over the long term. And it goes on to say in the article, you've got to be prepared to get skewered when the pick you trade ends up being really good. And everybody's like, why? You could have had this guy. Why didn't you do it? You traded out of it. But over time, over the long term, more picks mean more good players. So do we agree with that principle?
Sometimes. That's
right.
A cop-out
answer. Well, that's
answer.
Always the answer. That's always the answer in drafts, right?
Right.
Nothing works 100% of the time.
That I would have to talk, you know, round by round, year by year, because we were talking about this in at the break. Mm-hmm. D-Mace and I were saying, well, I would trade back in the second round, but I'd feel more comfortable staying put at seven. But when you take data from seven rounds across 25 years, give or take, it might tell a different story than me, myself, Caroline Fenton, general manager of the Tennessee Titans. I have to make a decision today of if I want to trade back from 38 to 45. How much can I let what happened in 1992 sway my decision? sometimes you can look at it and say, well, what this team is offering me, that's another aspect of it. It's not just trading back. It's what's the compensation. If this team is so desperate to trade up to, let's just use for an example, the 38th overall pick because J.J. McCarthy fell into the second round, a la Will Levis last season, that they're willing to give me their second next year, well, that's a lot more attractive than trading back where the return might be a fourth or a fifth. So I have a really hard time subscribing to absolutes as far as the draft is concerned. I'll use the same approach that I use with analytics in terms of X's and O's and play calling. I think it's something that you have to keep in mind, but it's not going to be my rule. It's a side dish. It's not the entree.
Mm-hmm. Now, the study from 98-2004, they were only talking 88-2004.
80, 19. So, 60, was it 17
drafts? 88 or 98?
1988 to 2004.
Yeah. I don't know why I looked at it and thought in 1998. I didn't have my glasses either. So I wonder because I just went back and just looked at
so
it.
So this would include the draft that included one Derek Mason.
Yeah,
just
the 98 draft.
And that's what they talked about in the article was if you take a receiver in the fourth round in the 97 draft, you're going to hit.
Exactly. You're going to hit. That's just the way it is. So take a receiver in the fourth round. But no, I was looking at 1988. Good Lord, I don't have my glasses, but let me work this right quick. I was just looking at the picks, and how did they – are they saying that number one pick, based upon who was picked, would have been less valuable if
– Are you talking about the first overall
pick? Yeah, the first overall pick. Are they saying it's less valuable?
They're saying over that period of time, more often than not –
Uh-huh.
That pick had the least amount of value in the first round, okay. That you'd be better off trading down than taking the player that was picked number one. Now, I'm sure there's exceptions in there. I don't remember what was – like Troy Aikman would have been the first pick in the draft, I think, one of those years.
Well, it's 88. It was 88. 1988, they started with Andre Bruce.
So there's one right there that's going to downgrade that value of the pick.
Yeah.
But then you got Troy Aikman. I'm only talking about the guys that had really good careers to great careers. Troy Aikman, Hall of Famer. Jeff George had a long career, and it was a good career. I mean, it wasn't bad, but it wasn't great being the number one overall pick. Russell Maryland, he was out of there early. Steve Edman, he was out of there early. Drew Bledsoe had a good career. Like, he had a good career prior to the injury.
Yeah.
Prior to him getting knocked out, he took a team to a Super Bowl. Did he take two?
He ended up backing up Tom Brady.
He was with Dallas. Dallas didn't go to the Super Bowl,
He did get the Patriots to the one Super Bowl where they lost to Brett Favre.
Exactly. So then you got Kajana Carter. That was a bust because he got hurt. Keyshawn Johnson, he was sort of, based upon where he was picked, he was the okay player, but based to where he was picked, they probably
we're seeing a pattern just in those years. For every Peyton Manning or Troy Aikman, there's three or four guys who are like,
so it's almost
Andre
like
Bruce,
it's
Russell
almost
Mayer.
Like every six, there's two out of every six that are going to hit.
Right. But see, that's where the study, right? That's where it doesn't mean you trade down every time you have the first pick. But it does tell you something. Mm-hmm. But what the article gets into is how the human element that you can't resist when you have the first round pick, the first pick to make the pick a lot of times. Unless the first pick is obviously a quarterback and you already have the quarterback, like the Bears last year. And now, of course, they find themselves back in the same position this year. And this time they're going to take the quarterback. But I just think it's an interesting study of how the human brain works. And what the theme of the article is this data is out there. I would love to see, like you asked the question, Caroline, has that trend stayed the same from 2005 through 2023? I'd be very curious. We could probably do our own study just on the first pick and see if it holds true. Like Jared Goff, he was the guy that the Titans traded out of the first pick. That's who the Rams used to take with the first pick, right? Jared Goff, we could have a debate for a while on the value of Jared Goff. Jared certainly has in the afternoon, right? But he's good. But the value of the first pick? Was it more valuable for the Titans to get what they got back from the Rams? Mm-hmm. That's another debate. I think the Titans set themselves up pretty well with that trade. John Robinson probably had success doing that rather than taking whoever they would have picked with the first pick. So I think it's a good thing. But the data is there, is the point of the article, and yet the human people still go against what the data tells you to do.
And I think that if I am a front office member, if I'm a general manager, if I'm doing the picking, I see the data, I hear the data. But I think, well, does that data account for the injuries that are in this draft? Does that data account for how deep of a tackle draft this is?
I think it does.
Does that data account
over the long term? It doesn't mean for that day, that pick.
And that is the thing to me, is it is all on a case-by-case basis. It's a team-by-team basis. It's a player-by-player basis, a position-by-position basis. That I see the data, I hear the data, I understand what happened in those years. But I got to build my team now. Mm-hmm. And I have this many picks, and I've got, you know, this many holes on my roster. I'm in this position with my team. Because the draft approach for, let's say, the Tennessee Titans is probably different than the draft approach for the Kansas City Chiefs. One might be a little bit more urgent than the other. The Chargers draft approach. I think the Chargers are entering a territory where, like, they got to start winning pretty soon. They've got a quarterback that they believe is their quarterback of the future. Their draft approach might be a little bit more urgent or a little bit different with a new head coach, with a quarterback that's now on a second contract, and with a fan base that's getting a little antsy and they want to start winning now. I think there are so many factors that come into play that are so different every single year with every single team at every single position that it's fascinating to see the approach with the first overall pick, because you're right, we all covet that. That's like you just won the lottery, that you have the, you know, you got the golden egg, you got the golden ticket. Mm-hmm. And so it's fascinating to see that it might not be as coveted as we originally thought. But when it comes to the Titans draft approach this season, I have to look at it under a microscope, under a magnifying glass, on a case-to-case basis, because that's how we're going to be grading it.
Yeah.
That's how we're going to be grading the draft, is pick by pick, case by case.
Yes.
You know, return by return if you decide to trade back.
They've had three drafts in the past before this regime came in that didn't yield anything really to speak of. Not much. And that's why there's a lot riding on this draft here. So I looked at this article and I'm thinking in my mind, get more picks, trade down. I'm buying into this article. Eric DaCosta, the Ravens GM, is talked about in this article. He read the study, right? And Ozzie Newsome is also lauded in this article for the philosophy of trading down, getting more picks. DaCosta actually referenced this study that was done, and he said, why? Somebody say, hey, Eric, you're really good at making picks. You've drafted really well. He goes, well, we've had more picks than everybody. He goes, that's what Ozzie Newsome taught me. And so the more picks you have, the more throws at the dartboard you have, the more chances you have of hitting bullseyes or triple 20s or whatever it is that you're trying to get, right? It's a sound math, right?
It makes sense. The more opportunities you get, the more opportunities you have to hit. Mm-hmm. And then that brings up the other side of the opportunity cost of who did you give up on in order to trade back? Let's say, just for example, the Titans are at 7. Joe Alt is there. Malik Nabers is there. You trade, and I'm not saying that this is going to happen or it should. I'm just using an example. You trade back to 11. Joe Alt and Malik Nabers are gone. But you pick up a second and third pick, and those second and third picks, players that you pick with those picks, end up being good players. Well, what's more impactful? Did you lose more in not taking the tackle or the receiver at 7? Or did you gain more in those picks that you picked up in the second and third rounds? Like, those are all those are the questions. And that's what Rand Carthon is faced with now. But I want to get into your thoughts on this. Phil's on the line with a question for Willie on his data. Phone line's driven by WilsonCountyHunter.com. Go ahead, Phil. Thanks for calling in.
Hey, Willie, I guess. Just real quick, great job on the call, you and Chris Mason on the Predators call.
Thank you.
Y'all do a great job.
I appreciate that.
I didn't catch the full conversation. I kind of came in partway. And the study you're talking about, is that purely performance-based, or is that considered salary? Because you're going to pay a first-round pick, at least initially, more money than you would a later round pick. Eventually that could even out depending on the performance. But I was wondering if that rating takes into effect how much you're paying these players. And I'll hang up and listen.
Thanks for your call, Phil.
It's a good question. And when the study was done, it was before the rookie salary cap, too. So if you were to take a quarterback with the first pick, like let's just throw Jeff George out there. He got paid a lot of money before he ever took a snap, right? That's how it used to be. It's not like that anymore. It doesn't reference that. I'm sure it does in the actual study. The article doesn't get into that part of it and how they evaluated each pick and what deems a guy a successful pick. Like you were just throwing out some names. Guys who stayed, like Jeff George, started in the league for a long time.
Had a good career.
Played a long time and had some moments, but he wasn't anywhere close to a Hall of Fame. He wasn't a huge winner. So how do you compare that to a guy that was a great player for 3 years and then got hurt and his career ended? Like that, these are all subjective things, I would think.
And I think money
and the salary is an important part of it too. Like how much of the percentage of your salary cap are you paying these guys?
And I think money and performance kind of goes hand in hand, because if a player is elite, you don't care how much you're paying him. Like, how much is Patrick Mahomes
paying?
Because
you feel you're getting
worth it. Yeah, it's worth it. If whatever they want, you take it. Take my money. Versus a player that falls short of expectations, then you start talking about how much they're getting paid. We've got a bunch of thoughts on this, a bunch of reaction of what you think the Titans should do, what you want the Titans to do, and your reaction to this study in The Athletic. Again, a writer, Alec Lewis of The Athletic, kind of breaking down the billion-dollar question we all have, and for sure GMs won't admit that they have, but they do have, and that is, what's the right strategy for drafting? We'll get into your thoughts on this coming up next. Caroline, Willie, D. Mace, we are brought to you by Zen Sports. Start earning cash rewards on your bets today. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-889-9789. Terms and conditions apply. Must be 21 or older and in Tennessee to bet. Caroline, Willie, D. Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game, and The Game Nashville app. Let's get right into your phones. We promised your phones, so to your phones we will go. We're talking draft. We're talking Brock Bowers, the alternative at 7. We were breaking down an article in The Athletic that highlights the question that I think we've all been wondering is, what's the strategy to drafting? And some of the biggest takeaways, first and foremost, based off of a breakdown of the drafts from 1988 to 2004, so you can take it with a grain of salt, it's been a minute, it's been 20 years since some of this data was collected, that the first overall pick might not be as valuable as we expect it to be. And also, overall, the idea of trading back actually gets you more value than sticking at that pick. So let's get right into your thoughts on this. Our phone lines are driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. One texter texts in and says, which projected top 10 pick do y'all think will be a bust?
Which projected top 10 pick?
Honestly, it depends on where they get drafted.
Yeah.
Because I think the boom versus bust topic needs to go along with, well, where are they drafted? Mm-hmm. Is there infrastructure in place for a young player to succeed? Mm-hmm. Like, right now, whether it's Drake May or Jaden Daniels, whoever the New England Patriots draft, I think in the first couple of years, they might look like a bust. Because the Patriots don't have any players. Mm-hmm. They don't have an offensive line. They don't have receivers. You know, a change in coaching staff. Mm-hmm. Doesn't really seem like they have that firm of a culture in place. It doesn't really seem like right now the best place for a young quarterback to thrive. It could be wrong.
No,
but
it doesn't. I mean, you look at Carolina and what Bryce Young is going through.
Exactly.
It's not necessarily his fault. It was he got drafted into the situation. And because he got drafted into the situation, there is a potential if things doesn't, there is a potential that people label him as a bust. And it's not all his doing. Just like Trevor Lawrence, he would have been deemed a bust had Urban Meyer stayed there. Josh Allen, he would have been considered a bust had they not went and got pieces for him. So I think a lot of times when you say which one of these top 10 picks, projected top 10 picks, will end up being a bust, I don't know, because what do you classify as a bust? Do you classify a guy not doing anything as a bust? Okay, I get that, and you're drafted. But what if the guy has played 10 years, 15 years in the league, he's been a good player, solid player, a starter, is that a bust? Just because he didn't make a Pro Bowl or an All-Pro or ultimately a Hall of Fame, is that considered a bust when you, because if you draft outside the top 10, that's not considered a bust.
See, that I think that this gets into something in the article, right? Mm-hmm. Bill Polian is quoted in this article saying, I didn't like trading the high pick because that's got a chance to be the difference maker. But the overall data over the long haul shows that the top 10 pick doesn't always turn out to be the difference maker. Mm-hmm. You have the probability. Mm-hmm. It doesn't seem like it, but the probability is pick number 20 over the long haul has almost as much chance of being the difference maker, right? So the assumption sometimes is pick number 5 will be more of a difference maker than pick number 20. Mm-hmm. But over time, we know that's not the case, right? It's just like, and when you say bust, the question is about the bust. Corey Davis is a great example. Mm-hmm. Good player, solid player. But a lot of people would say bust. Why? Because he was the fifth pick.
It didn't match up.
If he were the 25th pick or a second round pick, you wouldn't have said that.
Exactly.
It's all based off of expectations. Like, if you ask me today, like, hey, you have to name a player who you think is going to be a bust that's a projected top 10 pick, I would say probably J.J. McCarthy, just because I'm not buying all of the hype on him right now. But let's say that the Vikings do trade up to 4 and take J.J. McCarthy. He's walking into a pretty good position. Like, he's walking into a place where he is an offensive-minded head coach. He's got one of the best, if not the best, receiver in the game. He's got a solid tight end. He's got a pretty solid offensive line in front of him. Like, maybe Minnesota is the best place for a young quarterback. And if they do take J.J. McCarthy, maybe he's the best of all of them because he's going into a position that's not really necessarily rebuilding. So I think that you have to think about, what are they going into? Is there infrastructure around the young quarterback? A lot of these teams picking first, second, third, they don't. But Cameron Texan says, trading down is a sucker bet. You have to have elite players. Trading down and drafting more mid-level players just makes you a mid-level team faster.
That is the Bill Polian right there. That's what he would say. Was that Bill Polian in an alius there?
I believe so. That is Bernard.
Possibly was, yeah. Bill. He listens to the show, so he probably texted that in. No, I don't know if he's listening to the show or not. But, I guess it just all it all depends, because I understand what the texter is saying, but in the article, they referenced the Baltimore Ravens. They're not a subpar team.
Right.
They're above. They're one of the best teams in the league, and they've been that way for the span of 20 years. Because of the techniques in draft that they employ. Like, listen, we want to gather picks. We want to make sure that if we draft 10 guys, we may miss out on 5, but we got 5 more that is going to hit. So, we base it upon numbers. The greater, the more likely we are to hit. Mm-hmm. If we don't have that many picks, we better be right. We better be right when we make that pick. Because if we're not right, it messes up everything else moving forward, because everybody's so locked in on that first round draft pick. Mm-hmm. And if he doesn't hit, now everybody's considering your draft a waste.
But also on the other side, if you trade out of that pick and that player that's selected at that pick is an absolute superstar, then you look like the dummy because you missed out on that player that you could have had.
It's
double-edged sword.
It's a wicked game. And they play.
And that's where it comes up to, it's such a case-by-case example. Mm-hmm. Because it depends on where you are, what your needs are, what's available in the draft. Like, let's say Joe Alt and all the receivers are gone before the Titans pick at 7. And there's not really any player on their board that they believe is worthy of 7. Then trading back is a little bit more palatable if there is a trade partner.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's why this article suggests that you should stick to the data and not, I don't know I'm not sure which way it's going to go. You referring to this as like the North Star, over time, you're going to be more successful. I think the Ravens are the best example that they show in this article of who's good at it.
Yeah.
And there are other teams that are like, but we got to take the pick at 7.
It's like, not necessarily. You don't have to take it.
Right. And so when you say, who knows what's going to happen? It's the draft. It's an inexact science. That's true. But the studies do give you a little bit of an idea of how it's gone, what history has shown.
So let's go around the room here. Let's say you have to decide today, and it's, not circumstantial evidence. You either stay at 7 or you trade back to, let's use 11 as an example with the Vikings. Do you do it?
Yes. I would. Okay, and I get another pick. I can say replace the third round pick. For
11
example.
And 20, what, 23? 11 and 23?
Oh, if you're getting 11 and 23.
No, but I mean, that's a no brainer. Right?
That's a no, but
let's just say I get in exchange for 11, to I move 7 to 11, I get the third round pick back that I traded for to get Will Levis last year. Then I would sign up for that.
I wouldn't sign up for that. I nope. wouldn't sign up for that. It would have to if you're
you
gonna
need
move,
more.
If you're gonna move if you're at 11 or below that and you're trying to move up to my spot at 7, you gotta give me obviously we're gonna swap the first round. And you got to give me something else, a second round pick if you do have it.
So you want at least a second, not a third. You want a second.
I don't want a third round draft pick. I want
– okay. I have 2 seconds, but yeah. That's even better
second,
for me.
That seventh pick is valuable.
Yeah.
And if you want to come up to it, your spot and then a third round is not going to do it. It's going to take either two first rounders or a first and a second and probably another pick in next year's
draft.
But
philosophically, you like that idea.
Yeah, philosophically,
just
I like it.
Just moving down 4 spots to get that. I like the idea.
I don't like it.
No?
I don't because
what are you going to miss out on from 7 to 11? Isn't there, like, on your board, especially if the quarterbacks are front-loaded and McCarthy's in there somewhere, the guy on your board could be your 7th best prospect, right? You don't need a quarterback. That helps you.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, it does. I'll go back to what Tim said. Tim Hasselbeck was on our show earlier, and I asked him, how many elite players do you think are really in this draft? Game-changing players. He said, as an overall, overall thought of the draft, if there are 10 elite players in a draft, then general managers should consider themselves lucky. So let's say 10's the max. I don't want to go outside of that 10. If I'm at 7, it feels like there's a pretty high likelihood that you're going to get an elite player. The Titans need that. The Titans need a left tackle, absolutely. The Titans need a lot of things. They need linebackers. They need edge rushers. They need a safety. They need a lot of things. But they just need good players. Ideally, you're not picking in the top 10 next year. Ideally, you're not picking in the top 10 for a long time. So I'd like the Titans to take advantage of the opportunity that they have picking inside of the top 10 to ideally get one of those elite players. Are you guaranteed to get one? Of course not. It's the draft. But 7, I think you would have a higher likelihood of getting an elite player than you are at 11.
That's the crux of this article. And
yeah.
Because you might be right, but over time, it's not always right. 11 could be just as much of a game breaker as 7.
I'm looking at this year's draft, and I think within that top 12, 13 picks, depending on how the quarterbacks are drafted, because we believe as we look at the draft, we think the 3 quarterbacks that are projected to get drafted within the top 5, those are 3 players, elite players, based upon their draft grade and how teams are trying to move up. And then you want to throw J.J. McCarthy in there because the team may want to move up from 11 to 5 to get him. So they consider him an elite player. So we already have 4 elite players without even naming the wide receivers. Not even naming Nambers, Adunze, and Harrison. So that's 7 right there. And then you throw Aud in there, that's 8. You throw Bowers in there, that's 9. You throw the kid from Alabama, the outside end for Dallas.
Turner.
That's 10. And I'm let me see. Can we get 2 more players out there that you would consider elite players going into this draft? There's probably another tackle potentially that is considered an elite player or have a high upside. So we're talking 11 players. So I'm thinking you can still, if you move down to 11, you can still get it because once somebody moves up to get J.J. McCarthy, it pushes everything down to you. It pushes the elite players in other areas down to you. So I wouldn't move past 11, 12 maybe. I wouldn't move past that. Now, if you start getting into the 15, 16s,
I'm out.
Yeah, it's not. No. I'm not getting an elite. I'm getting a good player potentially, but I passed that threshold of elite players.
Yeah, right. Exactly. And that's what I think you could afford to do that in certain years. Uh-huh. Maybe 2 to 3 years down the line. Hopefully, you're not picking the top 10, my goodness, in the next 3 years, but maybe the approach could be different. Ron Texan says Brock Purdy. Brock Bowers, yikes, mm-hmm. is getting the same hype that Jeremy Shockey got. Jeremy Shockey was an all-pro in his rookie season.
Yeah.
Jeremy Shockey was a four-time pro bowler. I'll ask you guys, if let's say...
He just had a short career.
The Titans drafted Brock Bowers, and he ends up having the same career trajectory as Jeremy Shockey. Would you do it?
Yeah, but I think Jeremy Shockey dealt with injuries, too. I don't want my guy dealing with injuries, if I'm not mistaken.
Played 15 games in his rookie year, mm-hmm. 9 in his second year, so mm-hmm. injury, 15 the next year, 15 the next year, mm-hmm. 15 the next year, and 14 the next year in his final year with the Giants. So he was with the Giants for 6 seasons, mm-hmm. then was in New Orleans for the next 3, played 12 games, then 13 games the next 2 seasons, and then his final year of his career in Carolina, played 15.
So he had a long career, but there was a drop-off after one of those. It just seemed like it dropped off for him. If the tight end turns into, you know, a Jeremy Shockey, I mean, early on, you don't mind, but then, you know, it's like,
you
okay.
You want more return.
You would want more return.
You know what's interesting about Shockey? 2002, Floyd Reese got an additional fourth-round pick mm-hmm. so that the Giants could move one spot up to take Shockey. So they moved up one spot, and Floyd Reese got an extra fourth-round pick. So that would be subscribing to this philosophy
of trading back.
The Titans traded mm-hmm. back one spot and got a fourth-round pick. The Giants mm-hmm. traded for picked up Shockey. Mm-hmm. And I think the Titans, I'm trying to think who they took in 2002. Albert Haynesworth, I think, was the one that they took.
See, that one. Good about that.
Am I right about that? 2002 was Haynesworth?
Yes, first round.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you would say that was a home run trade right there.
Yeah.
Right?
You get and who was the fourth round pick?
It Henderson? No. I was thinking four in the first round. No more about
that. So obviously Floyd was thinking, Haynesworth.
Brian Echols, no.
Mike Echols.
Mike Echols, nope. Yeah,
that didn't work.
That didn't work out. So.
You tried. You got a dart to throw at the board.
He missed the board.
I like Mike Echols, but it didn't work out.
Well, he had a bad injury, broke his leg, and mm-hmm. that kind of – That's the random. This is the other word they use a lot.
It's random.
It's random. It's arbitrary. Mm-hmm. Sometimes there's nothing you can do to predict what could happen to a guy. Mike Echols maybe would have been a pretty decent player.
Yeah.
But bad injuries, whatever.
Alex from Franklin, Texan, says Brock Bowers being drafted at 7 is a fireable offense. I could argue that any of these picks could be a fireable offense. Like if you take Joe Alt at 7 and he's horrendous, that could be a fireable offense. I don't think that he would be. Mm-hmm. But let's say you take Brock Bowers and he ends up being Travis Kelce. Well, that's not a fireable offense. Drafting gets GMs hired and fired no matter what position you're talking about. All right. We got like a week until the Predators play again?
Mm-hmm.
What the heck are we going to do? What the heck are they going to do? Let's get into that question. Coming up next. Caroline Willie DeMays, 102.5-106.3 The Game.
Pittsburgh has a tough one. Like, Pittsburgh's at home against Nashville. And the thing about that one is Nashville had a back-to-back last weekend, Columbus-Chicago, and they rested guys in both games. But that's their last game on Monday night. They're going to have four. I don't know when Nashville's starting, but they're going to have a minimum of 4 days off. Do you think they're going to sit guys when they're not going to play? Oh, because you know what? If they play Vancouver, I don't think Vancouver is starting until next Tuesday.
Oh, wow.
So for sure, you're going to play guys. And then they play the Islanders.
Yeah.
And you want that game to be meaningful.
That was Elliot Friedman and Jeff Merrick on the 32 Thoughts podcast. And the important tidbit there, Elliot saying, I don't think Vancouver is going to play in the playoffs until Tuesday. So we're talking a full week until the Predators play in a playoff game. Of course, assuming that Vancouver is the matchup in the playoffs. 91% chance of the Predators playing the Canucks in the playoffs. And Adam Vingan sent me this tidbit. If the Canucks lose in overtime or a shootout tonight, then Vancouver and Nashville is officially locked in.
Yes, that's correct.
So, Willie, what are we doing for the next week? What are the Predators doing in the next week?
I think they probably are sitting there in meetings today. The team has the day off today. That was their third game in 4 nights. And I do think that was one reason you could point to is why they were a little bit not sharp in the first period. But now it's time to look ahead. Today was an easy one, rest day. Tomorrow, I honestly don't know. Like, you don't want to have three or four. What's the normal cycle of a season? You're not usually going to have more than 3 days off in a regular season. And it's rare that you would have more than 2 consecutive days without a game in the crux of the regular season. So after about 3 days, like, your body as a player is going to be telling you it's time for a game.
Yeah.
So I don't know what they do on, let's just say, Friday, Thursday or Friday, to simulate what you would go through in a game, just to try to stay sharp. That's where they're going to have to be probably creative.
Yeah, it's going to have to be some type of inner squad game just to keep the juices going and everybody flowing.
Or at least some drills game-like, right?
Yeah. And because you don't want to, in simulating the game, you don't want to get nobody hurt. That's the thing.
You're not going to have Jeremy Lozon out there trying to blow people up.
Knocking everybody down. No,
but
you.
Hit King.
Here's the hit king. Watch out. No.
The record-setting play was so funny because the puck was going, and he was like, go ahead. Go ahead, take it.
Go for it.
And the guy was looking at it, just don't hit me that hard, okay? I'll do it. I'll take the puck. And then it's a smash. And there's the record right there.
Well, they need the rest, but they don't need a lot of rest.
Yeah, there's a fine line between good enough rest and you know, you got your legs back and you're refreshed, and also, Aaron, too much rest. And now you've lost your fastball.
I don't know what the record is, but I think you could ask yourself the question, has anybody ever, between the end of the regular season and start of the playoffs, had that many days off? I bet you're hard pressed to find one in the history of the NHL. That's something I'm going to ask her. Let's ask the league. Let's ask Elliot.
There we go.
We got to get the answer to this. We got plenty of time.
Get Gary on.
We have all the time.
Nick, get Gary on.
So keep an eye on Calgary at Vancouver
tonight.
Start
making phone calls.
I'll try.
If Vancouver loses in overtime tonight, and it is locked in Vancouver and Nashville in the playoffs, but that's going to do it for us today. We'll be back tomorrow at 11 a.m. Stillman & Company's up next.
Be love and loving your people. Peace.